And now, live from the Rowe Auto Group Westbrook Auburn Studios, it's Ray Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
Pretty as can be. No one knows her name. She's just a mystery. I have seen her maybe once or twice. One thing I can say, ooh, she's very nice. She's a lady. What I really want to know. Somehow I've got
7:06, you're listening to 100.5 FM. We will play later on this morning more of the Brett Baer, Kamala Harris interview. It is going to make you sick, so I'm waiting till after you've eaten breakfast, so maybe it'll be a little easier on you. Let me tell you something. Somebody wants to take my freedom? We're going to get an argument here. That's what this is all about. This is about my freedom to say what the hell I want to say about my government and my country whenever I damn well feel like it without fear of reprisal. I don't care what this government does. I just don't. They have no control over me. And you put me in jail for what I have to say, which is what people like Harris want to do, Clinton wants to do, Kerry wants to do, Temi Walz, my good God almighty, couldn't you have chosen someone decent, wants to do? I don't care. You know why? Because I know why the Cageburg sings. You can't take my freedom from me. I won't allow it. You can only take from me what I allow you to take. And I will not allow it. And anybody out there that wants to allow their freedoms to be taken by their government, you should get the hell out of my country. Doc Champy.
Good morning.
My buddy Claude Barraby from the United States Naval Academy, now retired. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm here to take away your freedom and pee on your leg and tell you a trainer.
Get the hell out of here.
But you know, it's really telling, and we really need to wake up. I know we're awake here, but you know,
and I'm calm. People keep saying, why don't you calm down? Right, I'm calm. Right, I'm happy.
Right. It's a beautiful morning.
Let me tell you something. Right. You want to fight? Let's get right. going. Right. I mean, these are a bunch of little pansies. Can you imagine Tim Walz? My good God.
Yeah, he's a Manchurian candidate. But yeah, but
he's a lot more than that.
Well, I know. But,
and it's about to happen, too. It is about to happen.
That'll be awesome. But really, because we love talking about the... I'm glad Claude's here because we love talking about the founding fathers, how wise they were. I truly believe that there is a God, and what happened to the founding of this country was divine intervention. You cannot have, I've said this before, the odds that you'd have so many brave and brilliant people on the border of civilization, because again, this was the frontier. All those people in the same place at the same time on the edge of civilization founding this country. I can't believe that happens by accident.
Of course it doesn't happen by accident. How in the world did we beat the greatest army in the history of the world at the time with a bunch of ragtag frontiersmen, farmers, outdoorsmen, and a few regular soldiers? Right. How did that happen?
Right, exactly. And these people weren't saints. They weren't on the same page. And the country's better for it.
Because
you had, and again, I feel silly saying it in front of YouTube because you know it better than I do. But you know, the debates about the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and the Anti-Federalists. I mean, thank God for the Anti-Federalists, George Mason and those guys, because they didn't trust the government. They were wise, and they demanded that a Bill of Rights be attached to the Constitution. And thank God for that, because you know what? We have a First Amendment.
Right.
There's no First Amendment in the United Kingdom. And what are they doing in the United Kingdom? If you say something the government doesn't like, the police go to your door and they can charge you.
They hunt you down.
Look at Canada. Look at what's going on with Jordan Peterson. He does not want to be compelled by the government he doesn't want compelled speech by the government, and they have persecuted him. They're trying to re-educate Jordan Peterson. He's smarter than the entire Canadian government put together.
What do you think they're going to do to Elon Musk? If she gets into power, what do you think they're going to do to Elon Musk? Well, he has betrayed them, according to them.
Right.
No, he has spoken out for a country he has grown to love. Well, someone who was not born here, by the way, but has come here and experienced the American dream and all the greatness of this country, and he loves this country, and they don't like him for it.
Right, and you can't play it, but he and Tucker Carlson were kind of joking around. It's like, Tucker's like, hey, what's going to happen if Kamala gets in? And he said, well, I'm effed.
Yeah.
And then Tucker said, how long do you think? And Musk's like, how long do you think my prison sentence is going to be? Because I don't have plausible deniability.
Right.
And look what happens to the whole space program that he's been developing And you know, you, I don't know.
By
if
the way,
seen,
did you see the
this?
Brilliance of it the other day?
Holy smokes! I mean, it's the size of a Saturn V rocket that came down. I couldn't believe it.
Grew up about 60 miles from Cape Canaveral. Yeah. We watched all of this growing up. We watched all these rockets take off. My mom and dad took my brother Jim and me. It was a big deal. And to see what we saw the other day with that rocket go back to the launch pad.
Now imagine 5 years from now or 10 years from now, what they will be able to do.
It's unreal.
This is the dawn of a new space age.
It is.
Because you're going to be able to put these massive payloads in orbit. And again, this is nothing against – this is a combination. This is a public-private partnership. And the NASA people, think about Voyager 2, which is still – Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, which are still – emitting transmissions from well beyond the system. 50 years. I mean, we were kids when the Voyager program came out. What the NASA engineers have done over those past 50 years is amazing. But if Elon Musk does not do it here, then where?
Well, of course,
the same thing with free speech. If not here, then where?
It's not going to happen anywhere, because if that gets shut down, that means freedom is shut down. We are no longer the beacon of hope around the world other than Jesus Christ. And the fact of the matter is, oppression will become. This is what they want, and the Bible does foretell it, this one world government where you have an elite group of people according to themselves. I don't know how you get to be determined an elite, just like I don't know how you get to be determined to be an expert. Heather Cox Richardson claims to be an expert historian, but she is not that. Hey, we got to bring in Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah, attorney Sarah Parshall Perry from the Heritage Foundation is joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. Boy, you guys are spicy today.
Hey, Sarah, you know the doc. Meet Claude Barrabee. Claude was professor at the United States Naval Academy and just recently retired from the Academy and from Navy service.
And a former maritime fellow at the Heritage Foundation in 2010.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. You know, you guys, you bring on these intellectual schlubs. I really want you to step up.
Hey, you know, I believe in Lincoln, and Lincoln is my favorite president. And what did he do? He put the brightest minds he possibly could around him, always the dumbest guy in the room. I always want to be the dumbest guy in the room.
Yeah, but he also suppressed free speech and habeas corpus. And
thank you, Doc.
Again, he was no saint.
Thanks for the buzzkill this morning.
I'm sorry.
By the way, did you know during the draft of the American Civil War on the northern side, if you didn't want to serve, you could pay $300 and not serve? Do you know who did that?
There was a president.
Grover Cleveland.
Yes.
He paid $300 to not serve and then became the president, you know, 28 years later. So anyhow, Sarah, how are you?
You know, I'm doing well, but I think I have the same reaction to the Bret Baier Kamala Harris interview as you guys did. And I got to say, was watching it on a plane coming back from overseas where I was giving a speech. And I have to tell you, it was absolutely abysmal. And I do think, for all intents and purposes, her campaign is done. I mean, we are less than 3 weeks out of this election. And she not only duck, dodged, and weaved on every single question, but she was completely evasive when it comes to the incredibly hard issues like the economy, like immigration. She had no direct answer because, quite frankly, the administration, and it is what I would like to call the Harris-Biden administration, has nothing to show for 4 years. She's promised us that things are going to get better if we just reelect her, but I don't think there's a single American in the country who is intellectually honest that has to look at her and think, wait a minute, haven't you already had time to get this right? And the answer is no.
Well, last night, Bret Baier pointed out 79% of the American people, regardless of political party, believe the country's in the wrong direction. That wrong direction was created by Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. She's always said, I was the last person in the room when the big decisions were made. And Joe Biden said recently, there's not a sheet of music between the two of them on policy. By the way, where were you speaking and what country and for what purpose were you out speaking?
Well, so I was actually doing a lot of speaking at law schools. I was at the Pontifical University of Puerto Rico, so in Ponce, Puerto Rico, which is a much longer flight than I would have liked, but had a great opportunity to meet with some really sharp up-and-coming law students who were planning themselves into going into public service, going into conservative litigation, civil rights litigation. And, you know, not all conservatives. The women's group, the women's litigation group down there, the feminists down there, also had lots to say. I spoke on sex-based rights and the mess of Bostock versus Clayton County and Title IX under attack. And I think it elicited, you know, some really thoughtful dialogue. No hostility. You know, every time I go to speak for Federalist Society, I'm always kind of wondering exactly how much security we're going to need to secure. Because, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, guys, but I don't have a tendency to be sort of a really banal wallflower of a personality, and I don't talk about boring things.
Whoa. So I thought you were a wallflower when we met. I mean, you were very reticent to say anything. You were uninformed on the issues. That's why we decided to have you here, of course.
Well, that's exactly it. So it was great. It was a really, really great experience, and got home, you know, about 7 o'clock last night and couldn't wait to jump on with you guys, because this is always, I've got to be fair, this is my favorite interview every week. I do a lot of media, and just the interaction, the dynamism, the knowledge. Ray, you lead such a great show, and it's really a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, that's kind of you to say, and I will say, Dr. Peter Earle, who's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research, says the exact same thing every Tuesday, which we love. Anyhow, so, you know, let me ask you this, Sarah, from your perspective as a lawyer, If Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Tim Walz, Kamala Harris all get their wish, and we are able to restrict or even rescind free speech in this country, from your perspective, what happens to the people of this country?
You know, it's so interesting. I have been sort of contemplating that end game question for a long time, because I don't think any one of us missed the fact that a man was convicted and sentenced to prison for praying silently outside an abortion clinic just a few days ago in England. I mean, we've already got sort of Orwellian thought policing 40 years ahead of schedule right now. And I'm very, very afraid that if people are not paying attention to exactly the significance of what's going on in federal government right now, let alone the state court systems, which are often sort of mini despotic systems. I mean, everything from custody determinations made on which divorcing parent affirms a child's gender identity to overturning local zoning and voter laws 3 weeks in the shadow of an election. But just at the federal government alone, which is tasked with the enforcement of our Bill of Rights and our sacred constitutional rights, I've got to tell you, this is an election for the ages. And I know I have been in positions where I have felt that before, I have said that before. I don't think the stakes are ever higher, and I don't know where we go from that point. If we are willing to sacrifice the First Amendment, I am not sure what is going to salvage the constitutional republic. And you guys all know constitutional republics last around 250 years. We are approaching our expiration date. So this could very much be a situation where it is do or die for us. That is, I think, part of the reason I am so happy to be a public interest lawyer in this field right now for this time, because we've got the Supreme Court ultimately is the last bulwark against the encroachment of the massive police state. And their interpretation and their application of constitutional protections could be the only thing that ultimately saves us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, at the end of the day, but we're seeing it right now. They keep talking about fascism and all the words that they don't actually even understand. Fascism is when the government runs everything. That is the last thing Donald Trump wants. He doesn't want the government involved in anything. But they use words like that. But that's where we will head. If we lose free speech, we go to fascism. Because if nobody can speak out about what's happening, if we can't stir the heart and souls of the masses about the oppression of our government, that's why constitutional republics go away at around 250 years. And keep in mind, next spring is the 250th anniversary of the shot heard around the world at Lexington and Concord, where it all got kicked off. And at the end of the day, if you can't speak out about your grievances against your government at any time and in any place without fear of reprisal, you lose all of your other rights as well. Because think about the Fourth Amendment, illegal quartering. If you can't speak out about it, well, then how would somebody even know what's happening?
Right.
And there are many people, I'm not one of them, by the way, I am not one of them, but there are many people who believe that part of the Harris-Biden administration going forward, because it'll be Harris-Waltz, Tim Walz and Joe Biden are interchangeable on a whole lot of stuff, and I know you all know what I mean, that she'll illegally quarter illegals because there are no housing options available.
Right. Right. I think
if you can't speak out about it, how does anybody know what's happening?
Right. It's legitimate fear. That's what people always say.
I mean, I'm not one of those.
The Fourth Amendment seems kind of obsolete, but
we have always let
really?
Anybody come into our home. If somebody needs
right.
shelter, we have always taken them in. We've always done that. We did it again last night. We have always taken people in. So I'm not fearing that, but there are people who are.
Well, it's like that scene in Dr. Zhivago. You clearly have too much room in your home, so you have room for other people.
Yes, isn't that a great line?
Right.
Well done, Claude. That was from 1970?
I think so.
Well done, Claude. See, yeah. Sarah, that's why we bring him in here. He's a professor. He knows his stuff. By the way, he's not only a professor. I know I embarrass you when I do this. He has a PhD.
Well, that would explain all the idiocy we hear coming out of his mouth. I mean, say something
meaningful,
okay?
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. I am so frustrated by these people. And yes, by the way, I keep getting these things. Are you calm? I am calm. You know, if God didn't want me to behave this way, he wouldn't have made me this person. Right?
This spicy, I like to call it.
Yeah, exactly. If this is not what God wanted, why did he make me like this? Why did he give me the ability to behave this way if he didn't want me to behave this way? We got to wake up the hearts and minds of people. We got to wake up people's souls. We got to stir them. They have to understand what's happening here.
Yeah, absolutely true. And because there's so much at stake.
We've already seen early voting records shattered in Georgia. Now, that does not surprise me, but they've cast more than 300,000 ballots on the first day of early voting. Now, that could portend good things for conservatism and a return to sanity. I mean, we understand, obviously, Georgia is itself sort of in the crosshairs because a state judge just struck down a new rule that had been implicating more voter integrity, specifically that votes were to be hand counted. Why you would want to strike that down, God can only say. But again, this is a mini despotism of the state court system, where these elected judges have no problem running on political platforms as opposed to textualist or originalist perspectives in constitutional interpretation. But I do think that portends good things for us, because so many individuals understand, at the very least, the stakes that are involved in this particular election. So, you know, and I'm not one for early voting, and I'm not one for absentee voting. I will get in line like the rest of the American proles, and I will stand there and wait for my vote to be cast.
Right.
But I will tell you, for an interesting dynamic on exactly where people think the election is going. Don't know if you guys have ever followed Polymarket, but it is ultimately an odds site for everything from sports to economics to trade to the presidential election.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it indicates exactly where people are going to think that the presidential election is going to end up. As of this morning, I got on right before I got on the show, Donald Trump, they have it 61%. And Kamala Harris, they've got it 39%.
Yeah.
That is a significant indicator of exactly where people in the country think the election is going, and people vote the way they are inclined to think the success will be. That is precisely what we're seeing right now. My fingers are crossed that this is going to demonstrate to us that these were accurate predictions.
You know, that is the largest gap they've ever had in a presidential race. It happened yesterday afternoon. But it's the largest gap they've ever had. It's amazing. Hey, I want to lose you before I ask you about this. I'm sure you saw the appellate division of the New York court questioning what Letitia James did. We all know that she ran for attorney general in the state of New York on a platform that she would get Donald Trump. I said when she was running, that was Stalin-esque. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. The appellate division seemed incredulous that the law was applied in the manner that it was applied. One of them talked about the fact that you had co-equal intellectual partners here who walked away happy from the transaction. You can't find a victim. What were your thoughts as you heard those arguments, if you heard them? Sarah?
I didn't hear the arguments, but I did sort of read peripherally some of the transcription of this particular case. I got to tell you, I mean, this does not surprise me, right? So Letitia James is sort of the rogue prosecutor of rogue prosecutors. My colleagues, Cully Stimson and Zach Smith, have written a book on rogue prosecutors. Letitia James led the list from the beginning. This is an individual who is automatically tied to corruption anyway. So I got to tell you, these are particular issues that I would not be surprised are ultimately consolidated for Supreme Court consideration, because we still have simultaneously the situation with Jack Smith and the fact that the 11th Circuit has now heard Jack Smith's case ultimately challenging his appointment as being unconstitutional under the Appointments Clause. So I think it's very interesting. You know, the attorney general said that the school district had sort of ignored rape and bullying going on. She's now in a particular battle right now over what was going on within her state, within the sort of criminal process. I mean, she's automatically tied up with corruption. This is something I think we're ultimately going to see more of because I don't think the litigation is done yet.
So Jack Smith refiled charges. He reworked them to try to get around the immunity that the Supreme Court talked about as a presidential act. But how does he do that if it was determined he was illegally appointed, ergo he should not be in the position he's in? How does he get those charges refiled in that position?
Well, it's interesting because he's going to have a really, I think, long road to hoe on this. And in fact, he actually used what he believes was Gorsuch's ruling as part of the presidential immunity. Remember, this was the case in which we determined that if they are not official acts, there is no presidential immunity. If they are, there is presidential immunity. And if it is on, quote, the outer perimeter of presidential immunity, then that's presumptive immunity. So in other words, if you could have been doing something that was a private act, but it may also have been an official act, we are going to err on the side. The Constitutional Republic as a three-branch tripartite system of leadership. We're going to try to keep our president, our executive, protected. Entirely well-reasoned, entirely well-founded. I have to tell you, I agreed with the decision. I thought it was safe for the Republic. I thought it was constitutionally sound. It was one of the last to come out last term, and for good reason. We all knew that this was incredibly controversial. But what he did was cite Gorsuch's ruling from a case in 2010 called United States versus Pope.
Right.
And in that case, Mr. Pope, who'd been charged with firearm possession after domestic violence charges, argued that the charge was unconstitutional, should be dismissed. But Gorsuch was in the Tenth Circuit at the time. And what he wrote affirmed the lower court's ruling that the charge had to be settled at trial rather than pretrial and therefore wouldn't be dismissed. So what he's saying is, if you want to determine that I have been unconstitutionally appointed, we have to go back to court just on this issue separately. And so while the appeal is being heard of the decision that came out of the Northern District of Florida, the trial court opinion, Judge Eileen Cannon, remember, she was the first to say he was unconstitutionally appointed. It's gone up to the 11th Circuit. They are now hearing arguments on that case. This may be sort of a clash of worldviews because now we have federal precedent at the same time that we have federal trial court litigation going on. That is, once again, I think a question that is bound for the Supreme Court. These are big constitutional questions. You cannot prosecute a sitting president of the United States, which is when the investigation began, without saying this individual satisfied Article 3's appointment clause, which it clearly did not, because
right.
Biden should have made sure that Jack Smith was appointed according to the advice and consent of the Senate. He could have picked any other sitting federal attorney, any U.S. attorney in the country. He cherry-picked a private litigator out of thin air. That reeks of bias, and there's a reason that the Supreme Court warns against it.
Not only does he reek of bias, this is a guy that's gone after his enemies and lost. He has been overturned so many times after gaining conviction. Most probably prominent was Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife. The Supreme Court unanimously overturned that conviction because he has gone after people he doesn't like politically, which is not something a federal prosecutor should be doing. It's unbelievable.
No, that's exactly right. It's exactly right. And I think we're going to see more of this going forward. Remember, this is a battle to the finish. In either event, no matter what the outcome is, whether from the 11th Circuit or whether or not it's coming from the federal trial court litigation that now Jack Smith is asking for, assuming arguendo, he gets that actual case on what he's calling Trump's, quote, alternative defense theory, which is to say he was unconstitutionally appointed. Nothing will be decided before the election. So now, gentlemen, we get into a completely separate question. And that separate question is whether or not when you have a sitting president, let's assume God tarries and President Trump is reelected, when you have a sitting president, what is your capability to charge him with crimes that were conducted, and I'm using crimes in very big air quotes here, that were conducted at the end of his previous election and his term as president of the United States. These are very tricky questions. And again, as concerns the presidency, I don't think the Supreme Court has any option other than to take it up.
Well, and here's the bottom line. And I've said this all along. This does not give him a monarchy status. He's not immune from everything. You know, the monarchy was basically the divine right of kings because they were appointed by God. So whatever they did was godly and okay. That's not what happened here. What they said very clearly is something we all understood esoterically, and that is that the President of the United States cannot be prosecuted for official actions. If that doctrine does not hold, no one would ever be president again. Who would do the job knowing you have to make tough decisions where sometimes you get it wrong because maybe you have bad information? Maybe you're George W. Bush and George Tenet, the head of the CIA, and Dick Cheney walk into your office and say, Mr. President, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. We know where they are. It's a slam dunk. And so you go in and invade Iraq to get rid of the weapons of mass destruction. And then it finds out both of those jackasses lied.
Right.
So yeah, George W. Exactly. Bush could be prosecuted for a bad decision, but he was given information by people that we're supposed to rely on. So who would do this? Nobody would do this. And again, if it comes down to something like what happened with January 6th and all of that, which Trump, according to the FBI, did not orchestrate, organize, strategize, nor fund. That was a report in Reuters in August of 2021 that the FBI determined Donald Trump was not involved in this. But if you want to determine that that was a non-official action, then what do we do in America? We go to court. And we have the courts decide. This is a very simple thing. We just have a bunch of people that don't believe in America arguing about this issue. Sarah, I'm fired up today. Every day,
you know, I can
every
tell.
Day of my life, including Sunday, by the way.
You know, I will say Jack Smith also cited a case on one of the January 6th defendants. You guys may remember the Fisher versus United States case. And remember, that was 6-3 again this last term. They voted in favor of a former Pennsylvania police officer, Joseph Fisher, who was charged in the Capitol riot. And again, there were arguments that the law was being used to charge him with obstruction and it should really only apply to evidence tampering, which right. I believe. Remember, I followed these cases. I know you guys did, too. The way it is, the way the charge is written, the way the federal statute is written, it goes to evidence, documents, papers. It does not go to going to the Capitol on January 6th. And entering the Capitol. Listen, don't know if there were other sufficient concurrent charges that could have been utilized, but I will tell you the approach here, distinctly unconstitutional and a violation of the plain text of the statute itself.
Right. So you're exactly right about that.
That's it. That's it. Jack Smith was throwing everything at the wall. So he pulled Gorsuch's 10th Amendment or a 10th Circuit opinion in 2010. He pulled the Fisher opinion just this past term saying, okay, well, you guys articulated other bases that might have provided an obstruction charge. So he threw those in too. It's a kitchen sink approach. These are the last flailings of a desperate prosecution. And my hope is that finally sanity will proceed in the end when we get to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you know, I just want the government to stop harassing our people, all of our people, every one of them. And that's what this is about. This is no longer about right and wrong, which is what our judicial system is supposed to be about, a system of justice, blind justice. This is about lawfare. This is about prosecuting your enemies, and that's how they refer to them in privacy. They're political enemies. This is wrong. They've accused Donald Trump of it. They accused Donald Trump of going against the media. You know who went after the media? Donald Trump said bad things about him, which, by the way, I agree with. But you know who went after the media? Barack Hussein Obama. He went after James Rosen of Fox News and made his life a living hell. I know James personally. He tried to destroy him because he believed he possessed information he shouldn't have. That's what's happened here. Everything that they say about us, those of us that value traditional America, it's what they do. They're projectors. They don't ever tell the truth.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Sarah, we got to go. My wife is telling me I'm so late, which I obviously am, but we love having you on.
Well, guys, I love talking with you and looking forward to doing it next week.
Yes, absolutely. Sarah Parshall Perry, attorney with the Heritage Foundation. Thanks a lot for being on. Gentlemen, we're going to have a few minutes to bloviate. What do you think of that? I love this.
Bloviation. Yay!
My name is Kenny Chinquette. You may know me as the founder of Eric's Church Bar and Grill and Window, but this advertisement is to support my